Welcome to the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Brawley Darbin. I am in St. Louis, Missouri. On the other side of the line, we have Tony Clark, still in Philly, I think. Is that right, Tony?
I'm in Harrisburg today.
Oh, Harrisburg. See, I mix it up every single time.
Well, I told you, I'm always back and forth. Who knows where I'm at? This week, I am in Harrisburg. Hopefully, in a few months, I'll be recording in Croatia or some random European city.
We're going on a tour.
For now, we're in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I'm glad to be here with you, my friend. Let's get it rocking.
Yeah, for sure. So, this is a little bit of a special episode. Probably should just call it the West Ham Way crossover, because joining us on the call right now are Dave Walker and ex-WHU employee, the infamous duo. So, X, I guess let's talk to you first. What's going on? How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm okay, mate. Thank you. Really good to be back on the show and to see yours and Tony's beautiful faces again. It's been way too long.
It has been way too long. That's right, yeah. And Dave, how are you, buddy?
On top of the world, mate. On top of the world. You look at what West Ham are doing at the moment and the season they've given us, and me and X have said so many times on what's been a really shit 18 months to 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, West Ham have been a shining beacon of light for us, and they've just been an absolute joy, and it now looks like it's going to finish with just pure celebrations. It's already a season to celebrate, but if we can beat Southampton, then it'll be an even bigger one, won't it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I was so deflated after the Brighton result, even though my favorite player on planet Earth, Saïd Benrahma, scored a worldie and to equalize. It almost didn't feel like an equalizer. It felt like a consolation goal. And I was just so, so down. And, you know, the worst starts to cross your mind. Oh, are we going to fuck this up? Are we going to pull a West Ham? But it felt like we were going to West Ham everything up. And, you know, Declan Rice steps up to take a penalty in the first fucking minute of a game. And and just absolutely blasts it off the post. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, what's going to happen here? And then they score directly from a corner. And then you think it's all, the dream's gone. But I actually had some faith in us. I think I put in the group chat, I think we're gonna do this. We're gonna come back and win. And so I was actually optimistic for once. And then, you know, Ogbonna scores. I go absolutely mental. And then when Antonio put that third one away, I mean, I don't think I've screamed that loudly for a goal in quite some time. Even though it's been a terrific season, probably since the Lanzini goal against Spurs. But I went absolutely mental, because to me, the job is just about done. It's not totally done, but we've secured European football next season, barring a 9-0 Everton win over Man City. But, you know, it's just happy days. It's absolutely happy, happy days. And let's just get the party started. Let's start this weekend against Southampton. Tony, what do you think? Were you able to get a ticket to the Southampton game?
I didn't apply.
Oh, you didn't apply. Okay.
I thought it would be really unfair for me to apply. I wouldn't have been able to fly over in time. I am double vaxxed, but it didn't feel right. You know, we have so many English fans would be trying to get tickets who live down the street. Would I have flown over? I would have tried to, but it didn't feel right in my heart. So I didn't apply. I'm exempt, and I can't wait to get over next season.
Yeah. So Dave, I know X has said that you weren't able to get a ticket. Is that correct?
Yeah, at the moment, unfortunately, due to my family circumstances, we're all in complete isolation, so I'm not allowed to go out of the house. I haven't been out of the house for a week and a half. I've got another week and a half, just literally, in my house, which is testing, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But in a way, I was quite glad that I didn't get selected for a ticket, because then I would have been even more gutted that I couldn't go out the house. But no, I'm just going to watch it on TV. It's the first, I'll say today, this is the first time since the age of 8 that I haven't been to a game all season.
Yeah, I bet that's absolutely gut wrenching. And then Dave, are you going to the game?
No, I'm not a season ticket holder.
And
it surprises some people to hear me say that. But I was a season ticket holder up until when we started doing the pre-match events. And the trouble is, in those days, we did everything ourselves. So we used to get up at the fucking crack of dawn, get there, put the shirts up, you know, sort all the staff out on the day and get everything in place. And, you know, logistically, by the time the event finished, not both of us could have got to the ground in time. So I just took one for the team and dropped my ticket, and X continued to go. So, no, I'm not a season ticket holder, unfortunately. Although, if I want tickets for games, I can usually get them.
for those people that, you know, I listened to you guys' show last night, that quick 25-minute instant match reaction that you guys did yesterday. For those that didn't get to listen to that, Dave, why don't you tell us how you were feeling after that one?
Fucking hell, mate. I've been concentrating more of how I was fucking feeling this morning when I woke up, to be honest.
Yeah, how were you feeling this morning? Oh, I should have asked.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah, were you sick? I mean, did you get sick?
I mean, especially as I'm getting older, these hangovers are getting more brutal now. And I mean, just to tell the story for those that haven't heard it, in a nutshell, you know, I started watching the Tottenham and Villa game, and I expected a comfortable win for Tottenham, actually. And the fact that it wasn't comfortable, it gripped me. So I started to watch it, then Villa equalised, and then Villa scored.
Yep.
And I thought, fucking hell, like, this is our chance. But the nerves that came with it, watching that game, I had to have a drink just to take the edge off. And as X knows, I drink like a fish, and I drink quite quickly as well. So, you know, one became two became four became fucking six. This is before West Ham had kicked a ball.
Yeah.
And then the real nerves start. So, I was a bottle of rum down pretty quickly. And you know, even to this day, because I haven't had the chance to watch the game again, I can't actually remember too much about the game. I remember the goals. I remember going ballistic like everyone else.
Yep.
But I don't remember the intricacies of the game. All I know is that I was just on absolute cloud nine that we got that result, because it meant so much, and it's put us in such a good position now going into the game on Sunday.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, what a superb own goal from Reguilón on Spurs for that finish for the OG. I mean, fucking hell. Mate, what a finish.
Wasn't it? Fucking great goal.
Yeah. I couldn't believe I was celebrating a goal that wasn't West Ham related as much as I was when that went in. And then when Ollie Watkins scored the second, I was in dreamland. I'm thinking, just hang on, for Christ's sake. And then and then to hear the Spurs fan boo them off the pitch at halftime and full-time, it was just a terrific, terrific day, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they spent most of the time booing.
They did,
you know, because I think I saw it from when they were 1-0 up, so I didn't see them score.
Yeah.
But just before Villa scored the equaliser, they were dominating the game, really, and the boos were ringing out straight away.
Yeah.
And I just remember sitting there with my spice rum and coke with ice, thinking, you ain't got a fucking manager. I don't know where you're going to get a manager from. Your best player is about to leave you.
Yeah.
You're not going to qualify for the Champions League, and your fans are booing you, and you're shit. And I just thought, this is fucking beautiful, this.
Yeah,
I love this. And I really do think we could be witnessing the start of Tottenham's demise now, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, let's hope that that's the case. I mean, yeah, if, you know, when Harry Kane goes, does Heung-Min Song go in and say, well, I don't want to play if Harry's not playing, and if we're not in the Champions League, why am I still here? And then you start to see all their best players leave the club, potentially. I mean, who knows? And then the stuff with their owners and their fans. I mean, they charged their fans £60 to get into that game, and they didn't even put them down near the pitch. They put them up in the heavens, I think. So, yeah, it's just brilliant, isn't it?
Mate, he's fantastic.
No one likes them. I mean, the thing is as well, where obviously Dave and I have grown up, we're very kind of, I worked it out, the difference in distance from where I grew up, my family home, from West Ham to Tottenham, is minimal. I think it's about 9 miles to West Ham and about 10 to Tottenham. So where we live is very, very divided between West Ham, Spurs, Arsenal, and obviously your Glory fans that supported, you know, United in the 90s and probably Chelsea and City after that. And so throughout most of our life, all we've had is Tottenham fans say, oh, West Ham are shit, you know, West Ham are this, we're finished above West Ham, we're a bigger team, etc, etc. So the fact that we are going to finish above them in the league, barring a disaster, now, and you know, we are, they're supposedly the big six or whatever they called themselves a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to finish the season above them. It's just so nice. And you know, like, I just know that their fans, just, I don't know how to describe it. I don't know if Tottenham American fans are the same as English American.
Oh, they are fans. They are, yeah.
English, are they? There you go. So it's obviously something to do with the club, but yeah, it's, as Dave described it more abusively yesterday when drunk. I mean, I think he said fuck every three words, but it was spot on, and that's how we feel. So yeah, that's really good.
Well, we all know how Dave feels about Spurs fans because of the last trip to Las Vegas that you guys took. Yeah, when Dave wakes up out of his sleep fighting, he's sleepwalking, he's not even waking up, he's just sleepwalking and fighting fighting Tottenham fans.
It's the most surreal thing I've ever seen. Honestly, hey. I was like cowering under my cover going, Dave, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm fucking gun smashing the wall and stuff. I'm like, oh, God. So thankfully, if we get to Vegas this year, John Black's promised us separate rooms.
I was about to ask you that. I was going to ask that exact question if you guys were sleeping in separate rooms. That way you don't have the Luchadore mask on the bed waiting for the maid to come in and clean up after you guys. God knows what she's thinking.
Just so our listeners understand, I've been here. I am beyond jealous of all three of you. Because it just sits here and it's just so painful to listen to these amazing stories and not was able to go to that. So just so I think this is such an exciting opportunity for us four to get together if I can make it out. But also for any other people who missed it the first time, it just sounds like a blast. And I have FOMO, fear of missing out.
Oh yeah,
it just sounded incredible. And I was at the Brighton game when you guys were all there, and that sounded like much more fun than a 1-1 draw on a cold day in August.
Hernandez's last goal for the club.
Yeah, significant, was it? I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, Tony. I'd like to say you didn't miss out, but you did. You missed out fucking massively. It was such a great weekend. Obviously, the football was the sort of the top of the iceberg, but it was just meeting all the fans, the atmosphere, Vegas itself as a place. You know, there was just so many good memories. And I don't mean to be over dramatic and also to rub it in even further, but when I'm talking about weekends of my life, best ones, that is 100% right up there. I'll probably put it above my marriage, possibly a birth.
I hope your wife and kids aren't listening.
Right up there, right.
That's not right.
Brutal. I'm joking. The kids is not true, but the wife is.
Yeah. No, it was. It was special. It's just surreal, really. You know, that the whole weekend out there, and obviously from the second it got planned, and John Black is a big part of that from an operational point of view, because obviously he's over there, so he could source the venue and work out the pricing for the packages. And just the second we stepped off the plane and just got this fucking overwhelming sense of heat, it felt like we was literally stepping into a fire. It was just unbelievable. And the buzz, I'm just walking down that strip. I mean, it's like Southend-on-Sea on fucking acid. Yeah. You know, it's just mental. It's a mental place. And just the different characters that you meet. And this is before the actual event and podcast itself. I mean, the event was just unbelievable, because obviously we know that all of these different support clubs exist all over America and Australia and India and Ireland. But to actually get all of them together in one place, and the vast majority, if not all of them, listen to what we do and like what we do.
Yep.
It was quite surreal, really, walking into that venue and just singing Bubbles with everyone and seeing everyone having a drink and just the intensity behind the passion that West Ham fans have in America just bowled us over. And we just absolutely loved it. And obviously COVID is running riot in India at the moment, but after Vegas, we're due to do the same in India, in Bangalore. We've had an invite to go out there and do it for the Indian Hammers as well. So it's just these opportunities that come along for doing what we do, you just can't turn them down. And to think about going back to Vegas to relive what we did before is very, very exciting.
Yeah, well, I'm 100%. I mean, I have so many memories, and the reason we are doing this episode is to promote the new event that, fingers crossed, barring the Indian variant of COVID or any other unforeseen circumstance, from basically it's your government, really, is what it's going to come down to, is the British government, whether you can go or not. I mean, barring that, we are going to do this again in Vegas the weekend, hopefully, the weekend of August 13th, 14th, and 15th, and we're going to try to promote that event, which is why we're doing this. And I was there. Obviously, Tony, as you've heard before, was not able to make it out, which hopefully, fingers crossed, Tony's going to be able to go this time. We're really hoping that Tony can join us out there and not have some FOMO. But, I mean, my memories of the event were, I mean, so that was my first time in Vegas, actually. Lived in America my whole life. I'd never been to Vegas before. So just that prospect alone was very, very exciting. And then on top of it, to get to do all the West Ham related things was brilliant. I mean, I stepped off the plane. I was staying at the MGM Grand. I mean, what a fucking place the MGM Grand is. Mm. I mean, fuck me. Mm. Just heaven on earth. I mean, the sports book alone in the MGM Grand. I don't know if you two got to go down there with us. I don't think you did. Did you join us?
We're staying at it this year. If we go out, that's where we are this
year.
Okay,
then I'll be with you then, because I'll be in the MGM Grand too. But the sports book in the MGM Grand, literally, like four movie theaters screen wise cinemas, just in reclining chairs, and you can have any game in the world on at your disposal and go up and make a bet on it. I mean, it is the best way to spend a Saturday and a Sunday. It's just heaven on earth.
That's where I won on the plastic horses eggs.
Yeah, the horses game.
Yeah. I had it right off of them fucking things, and it's the funniest thing because they're like tiny little plastic horses with these little plastic jockeys, and you've got to bet on which one's going to win.
Yeah.
And then you see them tear around, and some of them are fucking like lightning, and all of a sudden it looks like they get stuck in mud, and then another one will overtake it from nowhere, and I earned a nice few quid on that, but that was at the MGM Grand.
Yep.
Was it? I didn't realise that. So we went there quite a lot then, mate, because you were...
Yeah, good memories from that place.
Yeah, so good time.
100%. And then, we get settled in at the MGM, and then the next day, walking into... So I had... It was right early. I mean, you guys remember how early that event was. I mean, out there, it was, a 5... 6 a.m. No, I think it was like a 5 or 4 a.m. kickoff over there.
4, mate. Yeah, 4 a.m. from memory.
And so I had this suitcase full of T-shirts because I was passing out the, at the time, the American West Ham Podcast T-shirts. And just the looks I was getting at 3 in the morning walking down the strip, because I walked from the MGM Grand to, I can't remember what casino off the top of my head. You guys remember what casino was Blondie's in? Planet Hollywood. It was Planet Hollywood is what it was attached
to.
That's
it.
Planet Hollywood. And then so I had to walk from the MGM Grand to Planet Hollywood with this suitcase full of T-shirts, and then the looks of people at 3 a.m. in the morning walking down the strip. It is absolutely incredible to go out there and people watch, and people were staring at me like I was fucking like homeless with this bag, dragging this bag across the strip. I mean, it was just terrific. And then we get to the event, and my dad, who has never met you before in his life and didn't even know what you guys looked like, you walked in straight behind my parents, and he only realized it was you because you asked him for directions and you were talking, and he knew exactly who you were, and then handed X the Mexican wrestling mask just before he even knew who you were.
Yeah, but you know what was funny as well, from what I remember, is obviously, you know, you go to the venue and it was early. You're right, it was well early. And I remember John asked us to hang back in like the entrance whilst everyone went into the main room, and then he'd just give us a little intro, you know, into the place.
Yeah.
So we said, yeah, all right, no problem. And we saw this geezer at the bar. I can't actually remember if you was with me with this conversation, X, or whether you was, but this geezer looked absolutely fucking ruined. Like, he was so fucking pissed. And I remember thinking, fuck me, mate, it's only about 4:30 in the morning. And we made eye contact, and he sort of was slurring all over the place. He was banging trouble. And he just said, hello, you all right? I said, yeah. I said, I'm good, mate. I said, how are you doing? He said, yeah, not too bad. He said, what are you, like, on holiday or something, are you? And I said, oh, we're here for the event. He said, oh, you're here for the event? I said, yeah. I said, well, we're Dave and X. He went, oh, fucking Dave and X. And like, was cuddling us and making us feel really welcome. And then about 20 minutes later, he fucking collapsed and got taken out by an ambulance.
And
when he was on the stretcher, do you remember everyone was singing?
Yeah. We can see you sneaking out. We can see you sneaking out. We can see you sneaking out.
That's it. Yeah. We can see you sneaking out. Oh, we never saw from the gate.
Do we actually know whether he recovered?
Yeah, he did. So yes. Yes, I have. I believe his name was Lou. I don't know if I'm correct in that. He was either with the LA Hammers or the Copper City Hammers. I'm not sure where he was from. But I was actually the one that found him in the toilet. I mean, I found him on the ground in the toilet. I said, we should probably get him some help. Because literally, I was pissing, and this guy comes stumbling in the door. I mean, couldn't even walk five paces without basically falling over, and he comes barreling through the door, hits the sink, and then falls over, and I was like, fuck me, we're gonna have to go get someone some help. And so thankfully he was okay. He was just drunk. I mean, the guy clearly hadn't gone to bed and just continued the party throughout the night. I mean, what a place to do that, by the way. There's no better place in the world than Las Vegas to have that kind of night. But yeah, just great memories. And as you said, the fact that we could sing and just sing at him and have a laugh about it and everyone be in good spirits about it was just hilarious.
And do you remember the police as well? It's just coming back to me now. Oh, again, I don't know if this is the traditional with American police, but bloody hell, they came storming in, didn't they? They didn't have any sort of like banter with them. It was like, get out of the way.
Yep.
Get out of the way. Pushing all these drunken people out of the way. And literally, they did not take kindly to a load of 100, 200 West Ham fans singing songs at them, did
no,
they?
You're absolutely right. They hated it. And the paramedics didn't think it was too funny until the very end, and they realized what was going on. But yeah. You're right. The police were very angry with us being in their way.
Yeah, exactly. It was just unbelievable. Like, it's just good times, where everything was just so funny about that holiday, just so funny, so many memories. And what was great, and Dave touched upon it earlier, was all the different support stuff. But it wasn't just your sort of West Coast supporters clubs that would have been, like, I guess, the closest ones to it. You had, like, your New York Hammers, you had your, I think, Philadelphia, I think New Orleans, not entirely sure where that is in America, but it's not near LA, is it?
So, no, it's not.
So they were, from all over the country. So it's just amazing how far people travel. Now, I can't remember who they were. There was two brothers, and they had got a car all the way from New York and driven across the country to LA. To Vegas. And I just think to myself, my gosh, like, what a commitment that was. I mean, I don't know how long that would have taken them, but Jesus, across the whole width of America, it's not going to be an easy journey.
Probably at least 2 days' drive, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I think they said 36 hours from memory.
Yep, that's about right, yeah.
Yeah, madness, but it was just brilliant. Honestly, you know, we just can't sell it enough, and we're not, you know, talking about it just to sell something for the sake of selling something.
Yeah,
this genuinely is such a good experience. And I can imagine that when you're a small group of West Ham fans in any given part of America, you are most probably 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, going to be the minority.
Yeah,
in relation to Liverpool Hammers, Man United Hammers, Chelsea, Man City. So to bring everyone together and just for once be a majority in one particular place, with all these different West Ham fans from America coming together for that mutual love, mutual bond of West Ham, really is something quite special. And no, like X was saying, it was a really special time for us, and that's why we just can't wait to do it again. And obviously, that was the event, which was fantastic. And then we do the live podcast as well with an audience. And that's great, because that gives an opportunity to interact with people that listen to our show. And I know you came on it before, Brawley, and joined us as well, which was great.
A lot of fun.
And it's a real, I don't know, for the time we're all there, it just feels like we're painting Vegas claret and blue. And it's just really enjoyable, really enjoyable.
What we're hoping to do, obviously, last event we had Jonathan Spector there, that obviously a decent player for West Ham, obviously played for the American national team as well. And we're hoping to have another guest there. But if we don't get the guest in person, Dave and I are going to line up a couple of webcam guests, so to speak. So they will come up on the screen, and like when we do the interview for the podcast, we'll interview that player as well, and obviously the audience will be able to hear it. And Brody, you'll be able to be involved, or Tony, whichever, or both of you if you're both there. You know, so it'll be really, really great. And as Dave said, it's just so nice to have everyone in one place. And I just literally, like, after the year that everyone's had, but especially me. I can't stress how much I need this to happen. It's just the right thing at the right time in my life, and I want every American fan that's listening to this show to pray. To pray, even if you're not going, do it for Take One for the team and pray that this goes ahead, because it's needed for everyone, I think.
Yeah, let's all bow our heads and say a prayer for X while we take a minute of silence here. what I remember about coming on the show with you guys is Jonathan Spector was the warm-up act to me. I was on after Jonathan Spector, and I was like, oh, this is great.
I'm rightfully so.
Yeah, what it's like, yeah, I definitely can I can follow up and be just as exciting as Jonathan Spector is. So yeah, I was flattered that I was on after John Spector, but it just, you know, as you said, just a terrific time. I was just absolutely over the moon with the way everything went, and one of my other favorite memories is I was there, so we had another guy that was from St. Louis, and his name was Dave Sperry.
Oh, Dave, friend of the pod.
Yeah, he is a friend of the pod. He's a big fan of the show, and we love Dave Sperry, so shout out to Dave. He'll be there again, by the way.
Yeah, he's a good lad, though.
Vegas. He is. He's a great lad. But what I remember is, I don't think Dave and X, you weren't sitting all that close to where we were standing, or you guys were standing, but I don't think you were standing all that close to us. And then when Hernandez scored that goal, Dave Walker comes sprinting across the room and just jumps on Dave Sperry's back and was celebrating, going absolutely mental. And Dave, I think it caught him really off guard, and it was just terrific to see you jumping all over this guy you'd never met before in celebration.
Dave Sperry's now in a wheelchair, is he? I guess. Yeah.
I'm surprised he survived that.
Yeah. Well, no. The funny thing is, Dave Sperry fell down. You know the escalators that go over the strip, right? The moving stairs that move up. He was so drunk after the event, he fell about four stairs forward. And he broke his arm and collarbone falling off.
Oh, fuck me. Yeah. You know what? We might have to put a disclaimer out that Vegas, you have to do it at your own risk to your safety. Because there's been a lot of casualties that weekend.
Yeah.
No, because we can laugh about it now, but I was really scared for Dave because he was in such pain, and he was by himself. Some strangers had to help him up and help him get back to his hotel. He made it pretty close, but he'd fallen about five stairs high, face first into like three people's backs. He fell into three people and broke his arm. I mean, what a trip that was. I mean,
fucking hell, literally.
Brawley's kicking this man while he's down. He's no longer going to be a friend of the pod.
No, he is totally. We laugh about it when we see each other at the bar we watch the games at. So he's all well and good now. We make sure we give him plenty of shit when we see him in Vegas again. That about that experience. Just amazing, amazing times. And I think here is a good place. I have some testimonials from some people that made the trip out to Vegas, and I'm going to plug them in right here, and we'll take a quick break and enjoy these testimonials from, we have Lena Starr, we have Scott Davis, and we have Jeremiah Carson, three firsthand accounts of what their memories were of the West Ham Way USA event it was August 2019, so enjoy those clips, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Lena Starr. I'm Polish, but I currently live in Los Angeles, and I am a very enthusiastic West Ham fan. I was at the Vegas event, what seems like, you know, ages ago now, but really it was only a couple years ago, and it was one of the best experiences ever. I was very, very lucky and very honored to be a guest there, so I got to spend a lot of time with X and Dave. And it was just all around one of the best things I've ever been to, mostly because I got to meet West Ham fans from all over the United States and a lot from overseas too, the ones who made the trip out. And every day we spent time together, we all ate at the same restaurant, and we just talked West Ham nonstop. And it was just an amazing event, and it culminated in on the third day where we watched a game together. And we all sang Bubbles together, and just the spirit of all the fans was just so overwhelming and so much fun. And I've honestly been waiting for the next event to happen for a while, but unfortunately, of course, we had to postpone. So I'm hoping and waiting and wishing to be there at the next event once I get vaccinated, and I want to see a bunch of new faces there so we can make even more memories together.
What's up, guys? Jeremiah here. It's on Monday afternoon my time, reveling in the 1-1 draw against Brighton, and it reminds me of, you know, in 2019 when the same thing happened during the West Ham Way event out in Las Vegas. And if you don't know, it's happening again. I don't know yet if I'm going to be able to attend to it, but I'm going to try in every way possible to get back out there again, because what an amazing event it was. I highly recommend it. And like most of us here in America, but really all over the world, the big way we get to meet with each other and connect is via Twitter. But actually meeting these characters and meeting people face to face and finally getting a face and with a name and just really growing as a group was amazing. You know, meeting David Next is fantastic, and Baz and everybody else that came over and made the trip to Vegas was fantastic. But meeting groups and clubs and people from places like Boston and Philly and New Orleans and LA and the different chants and just the different things that they do week in and week out, and talking to folks and just having an absolute ball with it. It flew by 2 days and you don't know it, and you're back to work on Monday again. But highly recommend going. It's a fantastic event, and if you get a chance, go. I know Vegas is a long travel for some folks, but it's definitely worth it. And hopefully I can see you there. Hopefully I'll get a chance to go. And as always, come on, you Irons.
Hey, I hear that Dave and X are on the way back over to do another Vegas event. And I wanted to tell you, best part of it was getting together with a bunch of people who I've met online or through Twitter. And there are some great people out there in West Ham land in the U.S. and in the U.K. I've had the advantage of traveling a lot, and I've met people in New York, New Orleans, L.A., and London, and a couple other places on earth who are West Ham fans, and they're some of the greatest people on earth. For those of you who don't get a chance to travel, it's a great opportunity to get together with some spectacular people who love the same club you do, who have the same interest in football that you do, and to build some relationships with some people who you might know on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, and just have a chat, watch football, have a drink, have a laugh, watch a club we love, and get together with some people who like really promote our club well. Dave and X are a great time. Best part of the trip last year, or the year before, whenever it was, that was many years ago, it seems now, was going out on the floor, and I don't gamble a lot, but just for a lark, I got a few chips, and I put them down on the wrong number and ended up winning $500 with Dave and X, which I promptly spent an hour losing. So, you know, you win some, you lose some, you break even. But the time with Dave and X was great. Anyways, come on, you Irons, be good.
And we're back. Thank you to Lena, Jeremiah, and Scott for those fantastic testimonials. As you can tell from them and from us, this event is not one to be missed. If you can make it, you absolutely 100% should make an effort to get over there. As Dave and X said earlier, we are going to try to have a former West Ham player in attendance. If that doesn't happen, then we're going to get something set up with the projector and a webcam call-in for one, two, or a few West Ham former players, and that would be brilliant. And included with your ticket, which I believe, Dave and X, correct me if I'm wrong here, is $95, is that right?
I believe so, mate. I believe so. John's the one that's running that.
Yeah.
I think, and forgive me if I'm wrong, and obviously I should know the answer to this, but I think John's looking to finalise the package. But yeah, I think for that $95, that includes breakfast and drinks for the duration of the event as well. So yes, you're getting value for money for sure.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, with your $95 ticket, that grants you access to the event. As Dave just said, you get a... Last time we had a breakfast buffet, which was really nice. We had an all-you-can-eat breakfast, and it was really good. And then we had all-you-can-drink from the bar, which is even better. And then on top of that, you get to meet Dave and X. And then also, let's not forget, we do have the recording of the West Ham Way podcast live in, last time it was in Blondie's, and I'm assuming we don't know where the event is this time, but wherever it is, you'd be able to join the audience for that recording of that podcast, which is just terrific. So this definitely isn't one to be missed, and just don't be a Tony and miss out. That's all I can say. Don't yeah, be a Tony.
Don't be a Tony.
Nobody likes a Tony.
But let's not forget as well that, you know, that's all the lovely, fluffy stuff around the game itself, which we'll all watch. Because obviously this is going to be, you know, centered around a live televised game of West Ham, which I think we're going to try and target the first Premier League game of the season. So it's a real action-packed few hours. And like I say, you've got the podcast separate to that as well. So like I said earlier, 100% Vegas is going to be claret and blue for the time that we're all there. And we just hope that if you came before, you come again. And if you wasn't there before, you make it your first time, because you won't be disappointed. It's a really good crack, and we hope to see you there.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know, X, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Not really, no. I think we've summed it up really, really well. Like I said, it was an amazing, amazing weekend. I know we're obviously involved, so we wanted tickets to sell, but if I wasn't involved and I was just going as a fan, so to speak, I'd be encouraging everyone to go anyway, because it is brilliant. And it's just you know, these opportunities don't come along that often as West Ham fans, and so I think just take it. And with the way the world's been in recent years, let's just forget all the crap that has been and just enjoy a real high quality weekend.
Yeah, I mean, even what's mental is, as Dave just said, the result could be a horrendous. I mean, we could lose 5-0 to a newly promoted side, and it would still be one of the best weekends of your life. I mean, genuinely, I've gone over to see West Ham 4 or 5 times in my life, and that event probably ranks in the top 2 or 3 West Ham memories that I have in my life. And it wasn't even at a game. It was in the middle of Las Vegas watching with a group of people I'd never met before. And it's one of my favorite memories I've ever had associated with West Ham. And that's as high of praise as I can give, and as much as I could sell the event is with that. I mean, honestly, if you can make it, or if you got to twist the wife's arm to get you there, do it by all means. And like I said, just you're not going to want to miss it. There is one final thing that I wanted to bring up, Dave, and this includes you in this story. I seem to remember you coming on this show, or maybe it was on your show, I don't remember. But for those that haven't heard, when I say the words intimacy kit, there should be a story that pops up in your mind, and I would like you to tell the listeners about that.
Yeah, well, it's good timing, because everything that we've spoken about so far is in relation to the event itself and Vegas and the memories. And the story of the intimacy kit was when that weekend had come to an end and it was time to check out. And before I tell you this, I don't know why, but for some reason, me and X got the feeling that some of the maids that were working the rooms in our hotel at the time seemed to think we were a couple. And look, there's no proof of that. Nothing was definitively said, but I think just a few looks and a few giggles, we thought that maybe they thought we were a couple, which we laughed about, you know, the first 2 or 3 times. After that, it was getting a bit of a complex. But what's funny is, obviously, your dad, as a joke, gave X a gimp mask to come out, because obviously he's anonymous, and that's how he got intro.
Yeah, we got a photo with X. It's a group of us, and it's the only photo of X that ever exists, and he's wearing the gimp mask. So that's terrific.
Exactly. And to be honest, thinking about it, as I'm talking, that's probably why they thought we were a couple, because they've gone to clean the fucking rooms, knowing that we're sharing, and there's this fucking mask on the bed. So God only knows what they thought we were up to. Anyway, when it comes to the last day, you know, we're all packed, and I'd had a shower, and then it was X's turn to shower, so he's jumped in. And I'm just mooching about trying to kill a bit of time. And, you know, you've got a minibar there, haven't you? Well, above the minibar, I remember there was a selection of sweets. And I've looked at them, and I've, oh, jelly beans, all that. And I've seen this tube, and I've picked it out. And I said, what's that? And I'm reading it to myself, and it says intimacy kit. And I'm looking down the list of what's in this little tube, and I thought, well, I'll be fucked. Anyway, I've gone over to the, for want of a better expression, I've gone over to the bathroom. X has shut the door. And I said, here, X, have a listen to what's in this intimacy kit. So he's gone, what? I said, fuck, you know, you got condoms. I said, you've got a cock ring, a butt plug, and we're laughing about it. Then I've put it back, right? So I don't know what it was. I was taking a bit longer to get myself ready. X was ready, and he said, look, I'll go and check us out so we're not in a rush. So he went downstairs, and then I followed him about 10 minutes after. And as I'm approaching the desk, I could see that the fella checking him out and X had a nice little rapport going. And it just seemed like the second I walked over and said hello and joined X and stood next to him, the fella's face just dropped, and his whole persona changed. And I fucking realised what it was. It's because he printed off the receipt, and on the receipt was an intimacy kit, because in those fucking hotel rooms, as soon as you pick something up, it registers on the system and you're charged for it. So now he's standing in front of two geezers and the receipt says intimacy kit for $45. So, yeah, I mean, we didn't do ourselves any favours whatsoever. And I think John Black, I mean, when he turned up and joined us, the geezer must have thought, fucking, what is going on here? But I think he managed to squash it off the bill. But we do laugh about that to this day. I mean, like I say, some of the capers we get up to. But yeah, that was a funny one.
That, that was one of my favorite stories that came out of the Vegas event. Just, I wish I could have just seen the look on the cashier's eyes whenever he realized what was going on, or what in his head he had thought was going on. And it just would have made me absolutely, I mean, when I laugh, I'm a crier when I laugh. So I would have had tears just absolutely rolling down my face. It was that one. And then the CD with the rapper, that those two stories will stand out in my head forever, which I'm sure, I don't think we have time for that one today, but because you've just recently told it, but that's one of my favorite stories that came out of the Vegas event. So just a great time, and it's just one to not be missed. And Dave X, to wrap this up, we do have a game coming up on Sunday, right? Everyone plays on Sunday evening against Southampton. So I was just wanting to get your thoughts on the game and get a quick prediction out of you two. So I know I'm putting you a bit on the spot here, but West Ham, I wouldn't say we're in form, but we're coming off a win. Southampton, massively, massively off form. Really have not been playing well. I mean, they were top of the league in like November or October. I mean, I remember that tweet that Southampton set out that said, "Stop the count," which was referring to the U.S. election, which I thought was absolutely hysterical. I absolutely loved that banter from the Southampton admin. But they were top of the league earlier in the season, and now look at them. They're just hovering above the relegation zone. So them off form. Dave, going into the final game, we have everything to play for. We still need a point to finish above Tottenham and finish in sixth spot and get that Europa League spot. So what are your thoughts, Dave, first on this upcoming game? Give us a prediction.
I think we've got to do it, haven't we? We've got to do it. I mean, you know, our form hasn't been the best, but the game against West Brom was massive. Absolutely massive. And you know what? Part of me probably, after the going 1-0 down, would have taken a point, because that would have meant that we could have at least gone and beaten Southampton and known that would have been enough. But the fact that we're now in the luxurious position of having beaten West Brom, we now only need a point. So we've got to do it. I mean, Southampton have had a poor season, really, despite a good start. They've got nothing to play for now. I'm sure half of their players are on holiday in their heads.
Yeah,
whereas we have everything to play for. Everything. And the lads will know that. I think Moisey will be drilling them all week as to how important this coming Sunday is. You know, I know the players are tired. I know that it's been a long old season, but they've only got to give 110% for 90 more minutes and we could achieve something phenomenal. So for those reasons, I think we've got to win it. And I think we're going to win it relatively comfortably. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win.
That would be brilliant. Dave, do you think Moyes is going to set up for a point, or do you think he's going to go after him?
No, he's got to go after him. He's got to go after him. I mean, we're a better side. We're at home. And we've got the players available to attack them and cause them problems. It would be madness to do anything other than attack them and go for the jugular. So, yeah, I think this has got a win written all over it, which West Ham being West Ham probably means we'll fucking lose. But no, I fancy it big time. I think the boys will be up for it. They've got one last push now, and they're such a tight-knit group that work their bollocks off for each other. And I think they'll want it for each other, and they'll want it for the fans, and they'll want it for the manager. And I think we'll get this over the line. 2-0 win for me.
Great. X, do you want to give your thoughts?
Well, I can't really add to that because I think he summed it up spot on. But I'm going to go with 3-0 just to really add to the season. And I just think, you know, the players, you saw the video, I assume you've seen the video by the official account showing how happy they all were at the end of the West Brom game, you know, all congratulating. As has been the sort of the underlying real positive of our season is the team spirit and the players, and they all seem to love playing with each other, play with the what is the phrase? That's slightly better. play alongside.
I haven't seen that footage.
That definitely a few intimacy kits leads there. Playing alongside each other and playing alongside or under with David Moyes and the backroom staff. And I think they've got a real spirit now. They know it's one game. They're all buzzing for it. You know, I have heard that they are all buzzing, you know. So I think all they need to do is try and put one last good performance in, which will cement one of our best seasons, probably in my lifetime. I mean, since I've been going, the highest we've finished ever in the league. In the top division was fifth. So if we finish sixth, it's only one place lower. And, you know, the division, I think now, with the money that the clubs like Man City and Chelsea and Liverpool and stuff can all spend, I think it's harder to finish up higher up the league now than it was, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So this achievement is huge, and I think massive respect to the manager, the players and everyone involved that they've done this. And like Dave said, it would be typically West Ham to fuck this up, but what we've got to remember though is that Tottenham have to beat Leicester. Leicester are still going for the Champions League spot, so they've got everything to play for, and it's at Leicester. So Tottenham getting 3 points isn't a given anyway. True. So I think we're going to do this. And then sixth spot, European tour. Happy fucking days. Loving it.
Yeah, and
what do you boys think?
Yeah, I'll let Tony go first. Go ahead, Tony.
I've been itching to get this out. Once Brawley told me you guys were joining the podcast, I've been itching to have this conversation with you two. Because I remember an afternoon on Wednesday, September 9th, we put out a strong language warning for a podcast, show number 22, joined by Dave Walker, an XWHU employee. And I was pretty much mugged off for about a whole hour for saying that I think that we would finish in the top half of the table. And you three fuckers were so rude and disrespectful and mean and banter and called me a bitch and whatever, all kinds of vile comments and embarrassed me. And I came here to say I wasn't even going to do the pod today because, frankly, I am at work, but I took time off just to get on this podcast to tell you three to go fuck yourselves, to prove that I was right. Oh, I even dropped my damn iPad doing this fucking podcast to tell you three to shove it because I was right and we finished top half. So fuck you guys.
Now, well, going on, do you know what? Before you carry on, Tone, I've got to say, if I was in your position, I'd be doing and saying exactly the same thing. This must be so sweet for you, because whilst I think there's a slight dramatisation as to what was actually said to you, I do remember thinking that you were being very overly ambitious. And I think, Tony, you've basically just proved that you know more than we do about West Ham. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, so who says Americans don't know their football?
There you go.
They know it better than us.
I'll tell you what, I think for me what it was going into the end of last year, just how we finished after the break of COVID, the conditions being the same, the team, although I think we needed more investment, we kept the same team that really finished the season strong. I had this weird feeling. Now, I will say, I did say on the podcast, if we got through that first really tough stretch, that we would finish top half. And we did. And back to the West Brom game, one moment before I move to Southampton and get my 2 minutes here. This team is different. I remember plenty of games watching West Ham go 1-0 down to West Brom or anybody. And, well, early doors done and we just keep it moving and we took a loss. Or even the Brighton game, this team to me feels different, and I think that we at least get the draw or get a win against Southampton, and we're going on a European tour. I already have flights marked on my calendar on potential cities. I was already looking up who the English teams drew in the Europa League last year. I can fly New York to Milan for $500 round trip on a Wednesday to Monday, so I already have it all planned out. But, yeah, you know, I just wanted to say I'm really appreciative of you two coming on the pod. I'm really thankful for Brawley, and I'm really excited about what this season has. And it just has been an incredible year, and I'm glad my prediction came true.
Yeah, quality time.
The prediction came true. I hate usually being proven to be not good at predicting, as you would see in the predictors league. The fact that I sabotaged it shows how much I have losing. But in this incident, I'm happy to bow down to your superior knowledge and say I am glad that you were right on this one.
Yeah, it was just a... I thought we were all on the same page, and we thought he was fucking high. I wanted to know whatever Tony was smoking because I wanted some of it. Because if you remember at the beginning of the year, you remember that it was just like a photo that came out that was like the Premier League Hopometer, and we, West Ham, were in the very, we were in 20th place in terms of West Ham fans' hopes going into this season. We were dead last because we were confident that we were going to be in a relegation scrap. And I thought you were crazy for predicting us to finish top half, and here we are. We were last week still in a Champions League hunt, and that is absolutely incredible. So I just think David Moyes deserves all the credit in the world for this season, and the owners have got to back him in the summer. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I do want to add one more question for the group here, because going off of the win I just had with that amazing rant and being correct, I still have a really terrible opinion, and I'm still not sure that David Moyes is the guy, even though he's delivered this crazy season. And this is where I'm going to lose all the praise I just
fucking
got.
Stupid Americans.
Right. I just want to propose to this group is, do you guys genuinely think that, you know, he's the guy to take us forward and sustain this? Or do you think that this is a one-off? And I hope I'm wrong in this one. I like David Moyes, the guy. I'm just not sure that he's the one to sustain this type of play. Do you guys believe that he is the man and that he can keep us in Europe another year and the board will back him? And or do you think this will be a one-and-done Astrogugu situation, although we get the group stage? But, like, we're just back to 14th next year is what I'm asking.
I think whatever the case is, you've got to give him the chance to see whether he is the right man or not. So whether he is or not, we need to find that out, because previously we obviously got him in, decided he wasn't the right man, got Pellegrini in, let Pellegrini spend all that money on, basically, if you look back now with hindsight, a load of flops, really. I mean, the only one really that's any worth to us still now is Diop from memory. I think he may have signed Fabianski right at the start, but even then, no he didn't. I can't remember now, did he or did he not? No,
I don't think so. I think he was signed before Pellegrini was appointed.
He was as well. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was. So Diop's about the only one. Obviously Yarmolenko's still there, but the majority of them have moved on now and been big flops, like Wilshere, Roberto, Sanchez, players like that. So
Anderson,
we let him have all that money, spend all that money, and then we came begging back to him and said, actually, do you know what, we made a mistake, we do need you now, and he's delivered sixth place, hopefully. And so I think you just have to back him. I would give him a 2-3 year contract and see what he can do. And the other thing is, I can't think of another manager realistically out there that West Ham can attract that I would say, yeah, 100% we're going to get that guy, that guy's going to be better. I mean, you look at Scott Parker, he's done quite well at Fulham, ex-player, but ultimately Fulham were relegated this year. So
probably going to Spurs, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and it's, so to me, there's a combination of A, he's earned the right for us to see how well he can do. B, he's not really, his recruitment's been amazing since he's been here, bar the sort of Jordan Hugo of the first spell. But if you look at the recent ones with Schaffel and Suchek and all the other players he signed, Lingard, that he signed recently, his recruitment's been spot on. So if he gets the money, he'll bring some quality players in. And as I said, thirdly, I don't think there is anyone better that I would want. So for me, definitely. And I feel a bit worried going up against your predictions and your opinions now, Tony, but I am praying that you are wrong on this and that he is the right man.
Just to add to that as well, you know, some managers can be successful without being the full package. And I'll give you one example. You know, Roberto Di Matteo came in at Chelsea and won the Champions League, but then lost his job. You know,
yeah.
With David Moyes, this isn't a fluke. If you look at the ingredients that he's injected into this club to be successful, It's endless. I mean, it's a well-known fact that he is the hardest working manager in football. I mean, he is the definition of a 24/7 manager. And the second he got the job, he sat all of those players down and said, this is where we are analytically in terms of the distance covered, the speed of transition from our half to their half, yada, yada, yada. And he said, listen, if you boys ain't going to run for me, you're not going to play for me. It's as simple as that. So he got the discipline into those players very early on. His recruitment has been unbelievable. His ability to judge a player seems to be fantastic. And I just think, you know, that coupled with the fact that he's got players playing that were once upon a time dead and buried at West Ham. You know, your Aaron Creswells, your Agboners, maybe Antonio you can throw in there. He's got the best out of those boys. This isn't a fluky season. This is a well-experienced manager who still has the hunger, still has a desire to prove himself in this division at the highest level to be successful. And that's exactly what he's done. And it seems to me like it's almost as if he has deleted a large part of his career and we've got him from Everton. Yeah. Because what he'd done at Everton was very similar to what he's doing at West Ham. But as it happens, and it's anyone's guess how and why, his time between Everton and West Ham was an absolute car crash. And I don't know why. We spoke about it on the show last night. Maybe it's Man United was a poison chalice. Going to Spain, couldn't speak the language, different type of game, maybe, I don't know, didn't work for him. Sunderland were fucking dead and buried anyway. And, you know, not many people would have been able to salvage that club. So maybe he's been unlucky and he hasn't made the best decisions. But coming to West Ham, I don't know. I think good things happen to good people that work hard and still have something to offer the game. And that's what David is. And I just can't see this being a flash in the pan. I really hope it's not. Because do you know what? I like Moisey and I think he deserves all the credit that comes his way. And the players love him as well. And that's absolutely key. They want to play for him. So he collectively has done an incredible job at West Ham. And I can't see, subject to a punishing, grueling Europa League campaign next season, please God, and not being backed by the bold, I can't see him not sustaining a respectable league finish next season. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to clarify for anyone listening is I do, like, I'm backing him. I really like what he's brought to the table. I enjoy his press conferences. I like him, the guy. It was just posing the question is I hope that he can sustain this level of success because one of the things about supporting West Ham is obviously you don't support for the success, but it one of the things I've noticed this season, especially a lot on social media, is once a lot of the fans, myself included, got this even taste of Champions League and success, it's really hard to put your expectations back where they should be. And at the end of the day, some fans will be disappointed, but this has been a fantastic season that Moyes and the boys have delivered, and credit should go to them.
Yeah, it's a fair question because in the day we thought Slaven Bilic was the bollocks, didn't we? After that first season that he gave West Ham. I've got an even more controversial question for the three of you, actually. Do you think we'll do as well next season with fans back in the stadium?
Ooh, can I go first on this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have said this year, and I really don't want it to come off, and there's only really one way you can take it, I guess, but if you're offended by it, then so be it. I have said this year it has been a helpful thing that fans were not allowed in the stadium, and I just want to build off of that by saying, you guys remember how shit we were against Newcastle opening day of the season. That place would have been absolutely toxic, and it would, and who knows where our season goes from there. I mean, who knows where confidence is at when that happens? And I think West Ham fans are some of the best fans in the world, if not the best fans in the world. I truly believe that. But and I know the protests against the board are always directed at the board and not at the players. You back the team, but not the regime is what the phrase is. But you can't tell me the players don't feel that negative energy. And you can't tell me that when that goal goes in, that Callum Wilson scores against us the opening day of the season, that boos aren't ringing down, and then the protests start to transition towards the owner's box. All I'm saying is, yes, I think it's been a slight blessing that this year we don't have fans. Now, that being said, now that we've had this terrific season, now that fans are going in for the Southampton game this Sunday, 10,000 of them, I think it's something that we can try to build on. I'm really hopeful that the protests against the owners, if there are some, that it's all outside the stadium. I really just want the players to feel nothing but positive energy. And I know when you're protesting the board, you're directing at the board, but I firmly believe the players do feel that. So all I want and all I'm saying is let's give the players an absolutely massive ovation this Sunday against Southampton. And yes, I do think we can carry this momentum in with fans in the stadium. I just think we need to look at it from a realistic point of view as far as protest against the owners, that sort of thing. But I really believe now that we've had this good, solid, great season under our belt that we can push on and kick on. And having fans back in the stadium will only be a positive and not a negative.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question because I brought this up on a few podcasts ago. Something that I found interesting listening to another podcast, like an NFL podcast, and I'm not sure how much it actually translates to the Premier League, but a lot of professional players seem to, and I think we talked about this in the Bobby Madley referee podcast that Brawley did, is that a lot of the players and referees tune out. They're so laser focused on what they're doing and playing their sport and their profession that they sometimes do tune out some of the banter and what's actually going on in the stadium. So I'm not sure if it translates. I'm not sure how much it would actually affect it having people there and not there. However, the opposite could be said is when we need a goal in the 89th minute and the stadium's going crazy and it feels like you're sucking the ball into the net from the Bobby Moore lower, you know, that they've said that that has an effect. Mm-hmm. So I'm really torn on how I feel about would we have the same season. I think if we started off the first two games like we did and then came back and it was hostile, who knows? It just all depends on the mentality. However, what we've seen this season, we would have been building that momentum, you know? So if we were starting to get results, I can almost tell you it would be probably impossible to get an upper bowl seat for the London Stadium. So I don't know. I think we would have had the same results because I'm convinced if we could have got through that first hump and started getting results, that stadium would be behind the players, and I think it would have been even more dangerous for other teams than what we're talking about, if that makes any sense. So I think if we had people back, I think we wouldn't have a negative effect. I think we would have an even more positive effect, the team being rallied behind going to the Champions League. I mean, some of those nights would be incredible.
There's two interesting viewpoints there. X, what kind of side do you sit on in that respect?
To be honest with you, I think both of them have made very strong cases, and I can kind of agree with both in certain elements. I think Brawley's right. I think after the Newcastle game, because people didn't really want Moyes necessarily, and we just got out of a bad, a relegation battle the year before, I think if we we lost that Newcastle game, but with fans in, I think it would have been very, very toxic. I think it would have been a real negative atmosphere building on from the board out protests, etc., etc. So I think it would have created that an unnecessarily negative start to the season. So I think Brody is right that is good that was avoided almost by not having fans in there. But then to sort of follow on with what Tony was saying, I think when the team is playing this well, which you could put down to the fact there's no fans there, which is why they're playing that well. But when the team is playing that well, your fans get on your side positively. And it could have been the extra edge for us in some of those games that were a bit closer. You know, like I'm thinking maybe the Brighton game recently, for example, if we'd had away fans there cheering us on, perhaps we would have been able to get over the line and win that game. So I think they're both right without meaning to sit on the fence. I can kind of see a good argument. And what might be an interesting poll for you guys to put out is to put out that exact question. Say Brawley thinks this, Tony thinks that. What do you think? And see what your listeners think, because I can see strong arguments for both of what you've said.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they have made very strong arguments. I do lean more towards Brawley, if I'm honest, because if we're going to finish sixth this season, and we've only bettered that once in the Premier League, one thing that's absolutely sure by fact is that fans not being there hasn't hindered us.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? It hasn't been an issue for us. It hasn't stopped us progressing.
Like Sheffield United. Look at Sheffield United. See, look at Liverpool.
This is the thing. I think this question will bring a different answer for different clubs.
Yep.
Sheffield United have massively suffered for not having a 12th man there. West Brom, I think Allardyce said it himself, was the same. But the trouble is, I think there's different expectation levels from different clubs.
Yeah.
And whilst I agree with you, Brawley, whilst I think West Ham in their own right are the best fans in the world, I also think we're probably the most impatient fans in the world. Yeah. And the level of intensity that we create for those players, if it isn't going our way, I can imagine can really have a negative impact on those players. Because you're right, Tony, as professionals, you'd like to think that they are just going to be focused on the job. But let's not forget, they're still human beings. And if they're playing in the middle of 60,000 fans booing and cussing and fucking getting the ump or walking out, whatever it may be, you know, there'd be a stronger man than I am to take that on the chin and just completely ignore it. And it does go back to the Newcastle game. You've only got to look at social media. It wasn't in the stadium. If you could take the energy from social media that West Ham fans fucking generate and put it in that stadium, I think players would fucking walk off, you know?
Yeah.
So I personally, and I will be honest, and I take no pleasure in saying this, I actually think it's been a blessing not having fans here this season. But the only thing I will say is that going into next season, when hopefully from day one we can all start filling the capacity, is I hope that collectively as a group, the fans that are going in that stadium possibly realise that the players excel without the pressure that we can sometimes pile onto them. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that means as fans can be a little bit more patient when things ain't going our way.
Yep.
And we can more concentrate on generating an atmosphere, getting behind those boys rather than throwing our toys out the pram. And I think that's the one lesson, in my opinion, we should take from this season, is that whilst the club love the fans, whilst the players love the fans, and they'll tell you that we've been missed, really and truly, I think they're lying. I don't think they have missed us, to be quite honest. I think they've enjoyed playing their own game, being relaxed, and just doing their own thing. And I think we've got to help that, not hinder it next season.
I can't help but think the pandemic came at a perfect time for us as a club. I mean, I don't think anyone has benefited more from not having fans than we have. You know, when the pandemic hit, we were all saying we were kind of hoping it was going to be null and void, the season would be over, and we weren't going to be in a relegation fight anymore.
Yeah.
And you got, from the owner's perspective, they have to be absolutely over the moon with the way things have worked out. They're probably feeling the economic side of it as well, and that hasn't been a great thing for them as far as not being able to get fans into the shops, into the concession stands. But I do think we have probably benefited more than any other side when it comes to the pandemic hitting. And then I think it's a perfect time for fans to be allowed back in the stadium. I think 10,000 fans against Southampton are going to be I think that place will be rocking on Sunday for that game. And it's going to feel almost like a full house if you're there. I mean, I truly believe that. And I think we're going to be right behind the guys. And I really, really do hope that those 10,000 fans that are there on Sunday push the team on. And I think, I really do think the players are going to feel them on Sunday. Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess this question's for Dave or X or both, because y'all might have more knowledge than we would. I'm not sure if you have the answer and if you even want to share it. But my question is back to what Brawley's saying about the owners probably want the gate revenue and stuff like that. My question is that gate revenue and merchandise and stuff like that, is that even a blimp close to the TV money that the Premier League brings in and the winnings? As in, although of course they might want that revenue stream back of selling tickets and selling tops and stuff like that. But if they could trade off having fans back and getting the ticket and shirt revenue, or finishing seventh, which would be maybe what, eight more positions up the table and Europa League money, that surely would be better off for them, correct? Did I pose that? Does that make any sense what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, what you're saying is basically, is the gate receipts and all the match day revenue actually that worthwhile to West Ham in the grand scheme of when the TV money is so high? And you're right, the gate revenue isn't that much. I mean, the gate revenue, I wouldn't be able to tell you precise figures, but what you have to bear in mind with the London Stadium as well is that we have to pay running costs, all of the contractors, the sort of, you know, the staff that operate on a match day and the stewards and things like that are bought in sort of agency people. So we have to pay that money. And so I actually think gate receipts don't make the club that much money in the grand scheme of things. You know, of course, they'll make it a bit. But if you think about the wages that some of these players are, if you take the fact that, you know, Yarmolenko's on about 110 grand a week, you times that by, you know, the fact that you maybe have two home games a month, right? So in a month, he's made about 450,000. Say, you even the two match days are just about covering, I would imagine, Yarmolenko's wages and maybe one other player. So you think the whole squad's wages combined is going to be nothing compared to so much more higher than the actual gate revenue. And yes, there's more to it, like you said, like the club shop and things like that, but at the end of the day, people can still buy stuff on the club shop. They can just do it online now rather than, you know, physically going into the shop. So I think you're right, the actual match day revenue isn't that great really. And when the club talk about, you know, how COVID's hit them and stuff like that, yes, it would have lost them some money, but you know, the most important money to any football club by a huge, huge stretch of imagination is the TV money. I mean, you look at that, and the club's made like over 100 million. I think if you combine league positions and TV revenue and so on in one season, you know, the gate revenue would go nowhere near that.
And just to go back to the point about fans being in the stadium, one thing that I feel is quite important to say, because I don't want to do West Ham fans too much of a disservice. One caveat to what I'm saying, because I do stand by what I'm saying, but one caveat to that is West Ham fans, certainly for as long as I can remember, will take a defeat to anyone as long as those players give their heart for the club for 90 minutes.
Yep.
And this season is the first season, certainly since leaving the Bolin, that I can say, if ever we've lost this season, it's not through the want of trying. And I think you can argue, whilst we do pull the pressure on, whilst we can be impatient, whilst we can be quite intense, I think a lot of that will come down to being directed at the effort levels of the players in recent years. Whereas this year is different. Those players want it. They want it for each other. They want it for the manager. They want to win. We've got a winning mentality. And they are grafting their arses off for this football club. So, you know, I will say that. So hopefully if that mentality continues next season, then the fans won't necessarily need to voice a negative opinion, because even if we do lose, like I say, it won't be for the want of trying.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree any more with that. And I think that's a good place to wrap this up. We appreciate you guys taking some time out of your busy schedules to fit us in. And like I said, with the Vegas event, hopefully there's going to be confirmation coming out soon. We're really, really waiting on the UK government to greenlight the United States is really what it's going to come down to. So we're hopeful that that will be soon, and then the Premier League schedule will be released, and we can get a match week picked out, and then we'll have an official date and location for the West Ham Way USA event in Las Vegas, and we'll be coming to you with more details on that. For now, if you are interested in purchasing a ticket or just looking at more information, you can visit the following website. That's www.westhamwayusa.com. Just like it sounds, it's the name of our podcast, just without the podcast. So westhamwayusa.com, and you can find all the information. You can even sign up for a newsletter that will keep you in the loop whenever news is released. Guys, thanks again for joining us. Dave X, we really, really appreciate it. Tony, as usual, thanks for sticking in with it at work and joining us on here. We really do appreciate it. And we'll hopefully be back at you guys in sixth place in a Europa League position. Let's hope. But until then, be lucky. And until next week, Up the Amers.
Up the Amers.
Hey.